Shavua Tov.
Yeah, how's everybody Shabbos? Good? Okay. So we're here on Chaf Hayim Avei. Thank you so much. No, I see. So we're up to Itmar. And Itmar is kind of smack in the middle of the page. Maybe there's an easy way of finding a place. If you look at Tosas Divrei Maskil Lo Efshar, and you drop below that Tosas by about three or four lines, and the last word in the word is Itmar, and the first word in the line that we want to start today, in honor of the new week, is the word Hana. So let's just give a little bit of an introduction to this sugya. We touched on this just at the end of the last shiur on Thursday, but we didn't really get into it. The Gemara officially addresses the question of Reach. And a person is walking by a temple that's dedicated to idol worship, and they use incense, and he will inadvertently smell and enjoy the fragrance of this incense. But the Mefarshim here, quoted in the Masifti, quotes the Piskei Riyaz and others, that the Nidon, the subject of this sugya, is not just Reach, although officially we're talking about Reah, but there are other different kinds and forms of Hana. Even in the case of Avodah Zarah, he speaks about, for example, Re'ias Noi Avodah Zarah, that there's a pleasure that a person gets from beholding something, a work of art that's beautiful. So you have artistic idols and so forth. He speaks about Shmias Nigunim from the priests, and they use all sorts of musical instruments, so he gets pleasure. So there's pleasure here through the nose, there's pleasure through the eyes, there's pleasure through the ears, you know, different sense perceptions. And basically, the Kesef Mishnah generalizes this, and he says that the sugya is dealing with all Isur Hana, any Isur Hana. We're not dealing only with Avodah Zarah, we're not dealing only with Reach. Any form, for example, we've discussed in the past, Arla, and Klei HaKerem, and Basar B'Cholav, and Sharan Niskal, and Chametz B'Pesach. We have a whole list of Isuri Hana, where the Torah prohibits us from having benefit. The question is, what if a person has a benefit, not because he seeks out the benefit, but it's sort of like imposed upon him. As he's walking by, you know, he gets this pleasure. Now, it's very interesting. The Chofetz Chaim, you know, wrote a magnum opus, as we know, on the laws of Lashon Hara. And he has footnotes, the Chofetz Chaim, which is called Be'er Mayim Chaim. And he says that there are many proofs from the Gemara that we're going to learn later on, that the Machlokas that we're going to embark upon, which is the Machlokas Abai V'Rava, regarding this Hana that was thrust upon us, that machlokas applies not just to Reach, but also to other Hanos. That machlokas applies not just to Avodah Zarah, but to every other Iser Hana as well. And he quotes the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea Simon Kuf Mem Beis, who also codifies our sugya, in terms of other Isuri Hana, and not limited to the Reach of Avodah Zarah. Okay, now, there's a problem here that the Rashba and other Rishonim raise, in that our sugya seems to contradict a sugya in Masechta Avodah Zarah. There in Masechta Avodah Zarah, the Gemara quotes Rava, and Rava actually says that Hanas Reach Muteres. How could here, we're back to embark upon the famous Chumra of Rava, that Rav in certain circumstances is going to say that if this Isur Hana and this benefit was imposed upon me from the outside, that's also, I'm not allowed to expose myself to that. And yet Rav himself seems to assume in Masechet Avodah Zarah this is mutter. And basically the Rashba is so hard pressed with this stira that he insists, maybe we could just close the door a little bit. Oh, it is closed. That's as far as it goes. Okay. He insists that there are two cases and two categories of Isurei Hanah. One is called a Dover HaOmed L'Reach, and one is called a Dover Sheino Omed L'Reach. In the case of incense, for example, the reason why they burn the incense is because of the Reach. That's the entire purpose and the nature of that avod, of that service, that worship. However, in the case of a Dover She'eino Omed L'Reach, there, which is the subject of the sugya in Avodah Zarah, that normally what, you know, there's Reach that you can benefit from, but that's not the whole essence or the purpose of the Avodah. Since it's an Eino Omed L'Reach situation, therefore Rava is more mekil, he's more lenient. Then he gives another answer, and he says sometimes Reach could be pleasurable, but at the same time, it's a hazard to your health. It's dangerous to your health. And he suggests that the Sugyan Avodah Zarah is more mekil, Rav is more mekil there because it's a reach hamazik. It's something that's detrimental to your health. Then he gives a third answer, to which he claims that the Sugyan in Avodah Zarah is talking about a person who benefits from vapors in a way because he ingests it in orally. He takes it into his mouth. Here our sugya is talking about someone who smells the Avodah Zarah. Again, I'm just touching on the tip of the iceberg here. Don't begin to think that we've exhausted this topic. But this is one of the most fundamental issues in our sugya, how to reconcile Rava here in Masechta Pesachim with his statement in Avodah Zarah. And there may be various answers, and we've mentioned three of them just in passing. But Rava in Avodah Zarah is more mekil. Here he's more machmir. And in the Gemara's language, this is called Hana Habalo Li Adam Bal Karcho. The Hana comes to a person against his will. And Abai Omar Muteres. And we'll try to explain Abai in just a minute. Abai says it's okay. You know, you don't have to avoid this situation. You're allowed to put yourself into this situation where you're going to, in this case, smell the Avodah Zarah, enjoy its smell. But it's Baal Karcho, because it's against your will. It's not something that you were interested in. And Rav Amar Asur, Rav says, well, who says you have to go there? Who allows you to expose yourself to this smell when you know that you can enjoy the smell? Again, it's not something that you chose, but since you have, you know, it's not like a life-threatening situation where you have to pass by this temple for idol worship, for idolatry. So therefore, avoid it at all costs. Now, at this point, we really have to introduce the concepts and the terms that we need to make any progress in this sugya. There are two different concepts, and I mentioned them, and I wrote them on the whiteboard last week. One was called Efshar versus Lo Efshar, and the other one was called Machavin versus Lo Machavin. But the most important one for us in this sugya is Efshar or Lo Efshar. Because the Gemara is going to assume that for sure, if there's even going to be a Hava Mina, that Abaye could be Matir, maybe Rava could have been Matir, but he's Machmir, it's only because there's no element of Kavana involved. Again, as we'll go through the sugya, we'll see that Kavana is an automatic Machayev. You know, he's in violation of, even if he couldn't have gone down any other way in the world, but if he has Kavana and he intends to benefit from it, that's, so the whole issue hinges on this concept called Efshar V'lo Efshar. And Efshar V'lo Efshar basically means, how difficult would it have been, how much of an imposition would it have been for him to require of him to go in a circuitous route, to really go all the way around. So Lo Efshar is called Tircha Yisera. Are we familiar with that phrase, Tircha Yisera? Yeah? So that's called Lo Efshar. Lo Efshar means that although there is a way he could take a helicopter or whatever it might be, a very circuitous route, but it's going to be a Tircha Yisera. That's called Lo Efshar. Efshar would mean that basically, again, we may have a little room for manipulation, but basically it's shove and shove. He could have equally have chosen another pathway. Maybe he saves himself a few seconds, but it would not involve the Tirchi Yisera for him to choose another route, another pathway. So that's called Efshar. And Rav is going to build, castles in the sky based on this concept called Efshar. And he's going to say, look, I know that you're not Makavin. I know that you didn't give it that extra effort to try to benefit from the fragrance of the Avodah Zarah. That you didn't do. In that sense, it's certainly Bal Karcha. But on the other hand, I know it was Efshar. You could have taken another pathway. Who says you have to choose this pathway? And that's not it's not a Tirchi Yisera. So again, if it would be a Tirchi Yisera, which would be low Efshar, and on top of that it's low Kamachavim, because that's a given, it's always going to be low Kamachavim, then even Rava would agree that since it's Bal Korcho, and since he doesn't have Kavana, then it's Mutter. We don't have to force him into this low Efshar Tirchi Yisera situation. The Machlokas between Abai and Rav is going to revolve around the following. On the one hand, it's Lomas Kavin, as we said. But on the other hand, it's Efshar. Well, why do you have to go down this pathway? And, here's where Abai says that even though it's Efshar, even though he could have gone another pathway, it's still Mutter. So let's just read the first few lines of the Gemara, and then we'll give the introduction. The Gemara says the following. If he had kavana, whether or not he could easily have taken another path, but even in the case where it would have required a Tirchi Yisera for him to go down a different pathway, but he has kavana. Once he has kavana, that's an automatic oser, and we don't even have to. We don't have to take it one step further. Kavana means he had kavana to have hana. And I don't care what your circumstances are. I don't care how much of a tircha it would have imposed upon you to go a different way. It's irrelevant. Everybody, even Abaye, would agree that since you had kavana, that's not called bal karcho. Nobody forced you to have kavana. Kavana is that extra mile that you went, meaning, I don't mean the extra mile physically, but I mean to say, the fact that you have a ratzon, you have a das, you have an interest in having a benefit from the Avodah Zarah, that itself is asur. I don't even know maybe it's Yahari Val Yavar, who knows, but it's definitely asur. It's Isuri Hano. You might say, the Hano he cherishes the Hano, it's beloved to him, he enjoys it, whatever word you want to use, but he has Kavana. And if he has Kavana, that's an automatic Oser, whether it's Efshar or low Efshar, if it's Kamachavin, it's Oser. So out of the four boxes in that table, we have two boxes that can be filled in easily. And those are Kamachavin. If you check off the Kamachavin, I don't care if it's Efshar or low Efshar, it's automatically Oser. Because his Kavana was to have Hana from the Reach of Avodah Zarah. So now comes along the Gemara and says, what if it was low kamachavin? If it's low kamachavin, so on the one hand, he didn't deliberately try to enjoy the benefit of the fragrance, but on the other hand, is this really bal karcho? And in a sense, we could hear the voice of Rava. Rava is saying, who are you fooling? This is bal karcho? This is against you? Efshar, you could have gone down the other path. So what does Abaye say? It says, ki pligi be efshar velo kamachavin, velo machavin. That means, of course, he didn't have kavana. Otherwise, Abai wouldn't budge from the spot. It's not even a havmin, it could be mutter. But since it's efshar, Abai gets very nervous about this. I mean, I'm sorry, Rava gets very nervous about this. And Rava says, what do you mean? What do you mean it's bal karcho? You're fooling yourself, you're fooling us. You're pulling the wool off our eyes. What do you mean it's bal karcho? You could have gone down another path at no loss. Or no significant loss. So in order to understand Abaye, because again, the whole chiddush of Abaye hinges on on the fact that it's hanah bolo liolda bal karcho. So that word bal karcho is the matir for Rava, for Abaye, again because he didn't have kavana. Even in the case of Efshar. Now, if it's a case of Efshar, what does that mean bal karcho? The whole concept of bal karcho seems to be inappropriate. And Rava, you know, we could really hear Rava screaming and yelling. Don't tell me it's bal karcho. We have here an introduction to this sugya from three of the gedolim of the, let's call it the previous generation. Again, I could say that, but a young person would probably have to say it's two generations before. Number one, Rav Shimon Shkop. My father missed his shiur by a few months because it turns out Rav Shimon was only in yeshiva for, I think, 8 months, and my father was 1 year too young, so my father, I think, was 16, and they wouldn't let him into the shiur. His good friend, Rabbi Silver, who was the Rav later on in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, he was 1 year older than my father, so he got into Rav Shimon's shiur. And those who were in Rav Shimon's shiur, by the way, loved it. He was so charismatic, Rav Shimon Shkop. When Rav Moshe came to replace Rav Shimon, he had a tough time. The guys just they couldn't get over it. They couldn't part from their Rebbe Rav Shimon. He was such a charismatic personality. So his magnum opus is called the Shari Yosher. It's an extensive work. And a very similar idea appears in the writings of two other contemporary gedolim. One is the Kovet Shiurim of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. He was a little bit younger than Rav Shimon Shkop. And the other is the Avnei Nezer, the Sokachover, who was a Chassidish Rebbe, but he was a first-class Lamdan, like all the other Litvish Lamdanim. And they all came up with the following answer. And they said the following. There's one premise that underlies this whole sugya, and it may sound like a bit of a radical revolutionary premise, but you can't move from the spot without this premise. And that is that there's no such thing as an avera, in this case of Isuri Anah, violation of Isuri Anah, me'eleha. Me'eleha means without an action. There's no such thing as saying, well, circumstances had it that thrust me into a violation of an avera. There's no such thing. The Torah doesn't recognize circumstances had it. Either you did something or you didn't do something. Either there was a maisa or it happened may love. If it happened may love, then you're not responsible for that. And therefore, what is the yisoda yisodas of Isuri Anah? It cannot be may aleha. It's got to be al yidei maisa. You have to be guilty of an action that brought about that hanah. The Torah is going to say that even if the hanah sort of enters into your body, me'eleha, but you brought that hanah upon yourself. Kigon, for example, netilas dover lehenos mimeno. I pick up an esrog, let's say, and I want to smell the esrog. The netila itself makes the hanah into a hanah yedei maisa. Oh, here's another example. Halicha lemakom shu osid lehenos bo. The very fact that he situates himself, he walks from one place X to place Y, knowing that in that place Y he's going to enjoy this benefit, the halicha itself now makes the hana into a maisa hana. It's hana al yedei maisa, and it's not a hana me'leha. Shelo asra Torah hanok shel atzma elkshi bal yedei maisa. The Torah doesn't say the hanah itself, the benefit that you enjoy, is prohibited. It's the maisa, the action of bringing upon yourself the hanah. And he says that in the name of all these three achronim, if you don't accept this premise, and again, it's pretty radical because you and I would say, well, again, going to a place, well, that's not a maisa hanah. Right, that's only facilitating the hanah. That sets you up. Or if you pick up the esrog, the picking up the esrog, I mean, Adaram is a mitzvah to pick up an esrog. But if you don't accept that premise, that there's a maisa hanah, in which a person is bringing upon himself the hanah, that's what's awesome, then he says there's no way of going through this sugya. The whole sugya, which revolves around the question of efshar or lo efshar, as we'll soon see, is based on the premise that we have to set up your halicha, your going to that place, as the essential Avera, again, we have to wait until you have the benefit, but if you walk there and you situated your body there in such a way that you will enjoy that, that itself is going to be the Avera. And here's where we're going to have a machlokes between Abaye and Rava. Rava is going to say, look, it's Efshar. He could have gone down a different path. The fact that he chose this path, knowing full well that he's situating himself right outside the temple, the idol, the idolatrous temple, knowing that they're going to, you know, that they're burning the incense, that act of halicha becomes, says Rava, an act of taking hana. You are actively taking the hana into your body. Why? Because you could have gone down a different path, and you chose that path. Now, Rav Shimon Shkop here adds another point. The other Gedolim don't have it. And he says, how do we know that hana has to come through some action? And he says the following. All Isuri hana are derived, and here's the connection between our sugya and the sugya of Chizkiya Avo that we spent so many weeks on, through achila. The Torah prohibits achila, and achila becomes the prime method of hana, but achila is only a representation of hana. So inherent in the Isra achila is the Isra hana. Says Rav Shimon Shkop, then the Isra hana has to be exactly like the Isra achila, just like an Isra achila is an action in which you use the object for your purposes to consume and to satiate your stomach. So too in the case of hana, there's got to be some sort of use of the object where you take it into your body, so to speak, and it can't be meileh. Because just like in the case of achilu, there's no such thing as achilu without a maisa achilu, without a meileh, that automatically and haphazardly it falls upon you that you swallowed something. You have to actively do that maisa achilu. So too, in the case of hanoh, you need a lekichas hanoh. You have to take the hanoh. And we need a maisa to consider it as if you took the hanoh. And that makes the parallel between achilu and hanoh a perfect parallel. Now, what is the Maisa? So that's the yesod of our sugya. What underlies our sugya is that by walking to a certain place and situating yourself exactly outside the temple, that's considered as if you took the hanno. And that's going to be the yesod here of Rava. Rava's going to say that although there was no kavana, there's no way that we can classify your hanno as hanno meleha, as if it happened. It didn't just happen. You went there. It didn't just happen that this hana. You know, if a person is stationary in one place and all of a sudden they throw incense on him, you know, the smell of Avodah Zarah, that's one thing. That for sure is mutter, even according to Rava. The problem here is that you could have gone down a different path. You chose this path. And therefore, we're going to define your choosing, your walking on that path as a lekichas hana. So let me read this to you inside. He says the following. Efshar means she'efshalo shalo lavo lidei hana. It was perfectly attractive to him to avoid this hana completely. It was perfectly not attractive, comfortable. Let's use the word comfortable, right? Efshalo shalo lavo lidei hana. It was comfortable for him not to come to hana. And efshar means, well, it wouldn't have been comfortable for me. You can't tell me that I chose this path because I wanted to situate myself. You can't define my alicha as related to the hana as if I took it when it was low efshar. He says, kasher efshar lo lasos es ha-maisa, sha'agav asiyosav ba'a. I'm sorry, efshar shalo lasos ha-maisa, right? He couldn't have avoided that maisa. Again, what it means, if I couldn't have a void, we'll see, is Tirchi Yisera, is then you cannot consider that the Hana that he has, Agav the Asiya, means the Asiya set up the Hana. It was a case of the Efshar. Abai is going to extend this even to a case of Efshar. Okay, we'll have to see. He says the following. Tama heter, what's the reason to be mocked in the case of the Efshar, where even Rav agrees that's mutter? Shekasher odam osa samaisa hameviol lidei hana, it's considered hechrich, right? Kigon l'himona militorach tercha gedola. It would have been a tercha gedola for him to avoid this, you know, this route that's going to take him to where he has to get to. In such a case, even Rav agrees that ein maisa zeh, when he chooses this path, again he chooses path because the alternative was very bad, is therefore ein maisa zeh sha'asa, this walking down this path is not considered al shem ha'no shebalo. There's no relationship between walking down the path and the ha'no that came to him. He was walking from point X to point Y, and somewhere in the middle he got the ha'no. That's already bar meleah, because we can define his halicha as the place where he departed from and his destination point. That's one halicha. The fact that in the middle some hana is thrust upon him, that's not a halicha that set up the hana, because this halicha has a meaningful significance unto its own. And therefore, ein halicha nikreis al shema hana sheba. You can't relate the hana to his achila, to his halicha. And therefore, areu kin nene below maisa, it's as if his hano is without an action. V'ein iser bedavar. So again, what does lo efsha mean? Lo efsha means lo ofen bo adover eino efsha klal. It doesn't mean that it's impossible, but rather kavanoso li ofen shebo hahimanus krucha b'tarach gadol, to avoid that path would have involved a tremendous imposition. And he says, although Tosis doesn't spell this out explicitly, it's implicit. And he says, let's see if we can identify the... You see the first of the wide lines in Tosis Dima Maskelo Efshar? Those are the lines you want to... Nira Lari, right before that wide line, he says, what does lo efsha mean? Lo efsha kidarko. Because in a normal way, it would be impossible not to pass this idolatrous place. Why? Ela b'torach gadol. That's not the normal way you would do it. And if it's not the normal way you would do it, therefore, that's not considered a halicha for the purpose of being nana. There's no relationship between the halicha when he embarks and his passing by the Avodah Zohar where he has the Hanoh. So that's called Lo Efshar. The Pella here in this Sugi Rabosa is Abai, because Abai is going to say that even in a case of Efshar, let's go through it again. Efshar become a Chavin, Lo Efshar become a Chavin, Kuliyam Lo Pligi D'Osar. Lo Efshar V'lo Kama Chavin, Kuliyam Lo Pligi D'Shari. And again, here we're going to say what we said before, that even Rava would agree in this case, since it's lo efshar, that's not, you know, to go through this halicha is the normal way you would do it. You know, you'd have to, you know, do somersaults, and you had to find a different way of getting to your destination. Therefore, your halicha has no relationship to the hana, and we can't say that the halicha is mevias hana. But ki pligi, where's the machlokes between Abai v'Rava? The efshar v'lo kama chaven. He could have easily have taken another way. So now, there are two ways of understanding this. Rava's way of understanding is, why did you choose this way? The fact that you choose this way means that this halicha in particular, as opposed to the other halicha, there's only one aspect that differentiates this halicha that you chose upon from the other halicha, because they're both would equally get you to the same end zone, is that this place has the Avodah Zohar on it. So now I can begin to say, according to Rava, that since you were in an Efshar situation, your halicha and your choice of this particular path is related to the Hanoah that you have. Because otherwise, why choose this path when you have an equally feasible way of getting there through the other path? So you have 6th Avenue and 5th Avenue. So why did you choose to go down 6th Avenue? You could have gone down 5th Avenue. Now again, I don't believe that Rava should be understood on a psychological level. He's not establishing that we can analyze the man's mindset and say, well, I have a proof to you that he really was seeking out the Hana. Because again, it's a case of Loka Machavin. It's a case of Hana Abola Leona Balkarcho. So it's definitely a situation where he's not eager to have the Hana. But in objective terms, says Rava, when we look at his action, then the halacha defines that halicha as halicha that set up a hana, the reach in this case, because since there were two equally feasible halichos, then why choose one halicha over the other? Again, Do you follow my point? This is not a psychological analysis. It's not like we're putting this guy on the witness stand and we're interrogating him and we're saying to him, Reb Yid, why did you choose this? Oh, and he gives some flimsy excuse. That's not what it's all about. What it's all about is that the Torah wants to see if this halicha is related to the hanah. And the answer is, if we have two halichos, and the only thing that distinguishes one from the other is the hanah that you're going to get in between, that defines the halicha as the halicha l'shem hanah. And the hanah is not above mimeilav, it's hanah shebal yidei maisa. And that maisa is the maisa halicha. Again, he may tell you, well, you know, why did I choose that way? I was in the mood, you know, he gives you excuses. You know, when we were kids, we used to look at the floor and you didn't step on a line. You remember that kind of stuff we used to play when we were kids? So he gives you some sort of flimsy, immature answer as to why he chose that path. And maybe he's telling the truth. He's not lying to us, but that doesn't matter. The halicha itself is a halicha shel lekichas hanah, because there's no difference between this halicha, which has the hanah at the end, and the other halicha, which doesn't have the hanah. All that is according to Rav. Comes along Abai, and Abai says, no, this halicha is halicha from place X to place Y. And that's his destination. The fact that there's hanah down the well, he didn't go out of his way to choose, you know, a more difficult path. You know, he didn't go through a Tirchi Yaseir and a circuitous route to find that path that will lead him past the Avodah Zarah. And therefore, we don't have any reason to define his halicha as halicha shel lekichas hanah. Every lekicha without kavanah, every halicha, I'm sorry, without hanah, start again. Every halicha without kavanah, meaning without kavanah for the hanah, is halicha l'shem halicha. Right? And you don't ask, again, Abai would agree that if there were objective facts on the ground that prove that he chose that path in order to benefit, that would already be miskaven. And Abai has no qualms about it. Nobody questions that premise that miskaven is awesome. Okay, now this was hakdama number one. Now we get to hakdama number two.
We assume in this case that the person knows that along the way this
yes.
Not as a stranger in
yes.
town, he happens to stumble across.
If he doesn't know, that's a different sugyan shas. That's called misasik. Misasik means when I think that something, let's say on Shabbos, is cut, and it's no longer growing from the ground, and I take a knife and I cut it, thinking I'm cutting something that's what's called tolush into smaller pieces. But lo and behold, it turns out to be mechubar, and I had no clue. That's called misasek. That's total unawareness of what the facts on the ground are, and that's not liable. In fact, misasek is not even an avera, you know, it doesn't even generate a chiyuv chatos. You know, tonight, I don't know if I'll get a chance, I'm set to give a shiur here for Purim, and I was thinking of maybe discussing, I haven't decided yet, but maybe discussing is a famous sugi of a person who was trying to fix a Megillah, and as he was fixing the Megillah, he read the Megillah out. And that's called misasik. And the question is, can he be yotze the mitzvah Megillah? And the Mishnah says he has to have kavanah for the mitzvah Megillah. So that's also a sugya misasik. Misasik works both on isurim and also on mitzvahs. Because sometimes, you know, Reb Chaim says that when we daven, we're always misasik because our mind is somewhere else. And we don't have kavanah and tefillah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
You talked about internalizing, taking in perfume, whatever it is.
Like the fragrance.
Fragrance. What about seeing?
So the case that I had before, listen to this case, is called Re'ias Noi Li'avodah Zarah. And what it means was that they had some beautiful paintings or...
How about an edifice?
Edifices, they had sculptures, they had edifices. All this comes under Re'ias Noi Avodah Zarah. Now if a person happens to pass by a cathedral and he sees it and he averts his eyes, you know, that's one thing. That's lo miskavin, and that's also lo efshar if he happens to pass by a cathedral. But if he chooses to take a path, you know, in some countries you have no choice. No, wherever you go, there's a cathedral, you know. And and, you know, looking and enjoying the art. This is true for art museums as well. You know, there's certain galleries in an art museum, don't even dream of going into them. It's mamish like going into a church. But a church itself would be a problem of re'iyas noy. And if they worship those, now there are certain statues that they're not worshiping, you know. Like in Rome, for example, you know, there's a church that has two famous, for us at least, is famous Michelangelos of Leah and Rachel. You know, and people try to go in to see it without going into the church itself. You know, if you stand at a certain point, maybe you could see it in Vinkeli. These are all heterim that you have to really kvetch out. You know, the beauty of a church as an edifice. You know, Judaism never put all that emphasis until we got to the United States of America, then things changed. But classically, Judaism never put emphasis on the beauty of a synagogue. You know, a synagogue is meant to be a nice, comfortable place to pray, but the physical beauty of the architecture was not the emphasis. You know, you can go into a shtiebel and then it looks like just a block of wood, and you can have the most powerful experience of prayer. But other religions, you know, they combine religion and art in a way that we don't. You know, the Torah has shies against all sorts of figures. And, you know, again, there are 50 million questions about Judaism and art. I'm not trying to give you on the, you know, Sam's leg, you know, at the tip of the iceberg. What is the Jewish... the halachic philosophy on art, but in the case of a church, you know, you really have serious problems if you're looking at the church and you look for the sake of enjoying the benefit of it. Okay, that's on that sense. But getting back to our second introduction, we're now ready for our second introduction. Our second introduction has to do with the unique shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So let's understand, there's a machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. And until now, we've more or less assumed like Rabbi Shimon. And again, whether we pass like Rabbi Shimon is not so posh, but let's assume, just to make life easier, that we pass like Rabbi Shimon. And then we'll talk about Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Shimon holds that a dover she'ena miskaven is mutter. Which means that in defining an Iser, the most critical element in an Iser is Kavana. So I'll give you a few examples. The Gemara in Shabbos has a very complicated example. I'll try to give it to you, again, just on a superficial level. There's something called Tzaras. And the Torah says that with regard to this blemish, no matter where it is on your body, if it's determined to be tzaras, then you're not allowed to cut it off. The Torah requires a process of tahara, and in the process of tahara, the Kohen will check it, and then it'll come back a week later after Hezger, and there's a whole process. But basically, that nega has to go away on its own. What I mean... on its own, I mean, Chazal seem to assume it's some sort of metaphysical phenomenon. It's not pathological. It's not, you know, it's not something that dermatologists can help us with. But the halacha defines whether this is what a nega that's sent to a person by Shamayim. Now, in the process of the healing of the nega, if he tries to jump the gun and just cut off the nega surgically, so that's a lav d'orais. He violates a lav. And the Gemara actually has the following case. I mean, this may sound strange to your ears, but what if the foreskin of his mila, his arlus, has a nega? It's tzaras. And on the one hand, this child has a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah vis-a-vis the child of mila, but it's called mila b'tzaras. And the Gemara wants to suggest in a parak in Shabbos called Reb Lezer de Mila that according to Reb Shimon it should be mutter. Why? Because Reb Shimon holds that dover she'ena miskaven is mutter, meaning you have no kavana to cut off the tzaras. That's not in the least bit your interest. You're cutting this off l'shem mitzvah mila. The Gemara has another case, and that's called kos shel ikrin. Kos shel ikrin means a very heavy drug that's mixed in a liquid form, and it's prescribed by the doctors for very serious illnesses, but it has a terrible side effect. You know, a lot of drugs, as we all know, have side effects. You know, we haven't found the perfect drug. The Israelis say they're on the way, but we'll see. Anyway, so what happens in this kosher ikrim is that as a result of drinking this, you may become healthy, but you become sterile, incapable of having children. That's how it affects the body. And this is something Gemara was aware of like 16 centuries before modern science was aware of this. And Gemara says that to make a person into an impotent person as far as having children is concerned, that's called a lav of sirus. The Torah prohibits that under a lav. And once again, Reb Shimon is going to come to the rescue and he's going to say that if he's taking it for medicinal purposes, let's say if he already had children, whatever the case may be, but he's taking it purely for medicinal purposes, that in such a case he doesn't have kavana for a violation of the lav of sirus, and therefore it's mut. So that's as far as Reb Shimon is concerned. So therefore, in our sugya, if you recall, we already neutralized the element of kavana, because the machlokas, the battleground between Abai and Rava is beyond kavana. Meaning, in both cases, in the two cases out of the three that everyone agrees is asur, that's the case of kavachavin. So the whole machlokas between Abai and Rava, as we said over and over again, is because he didn't have kavana. So that works out beautifully according to Reb Shimon. Oh. Now we have to introduce the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda differentiates between what's called yediyah and kavana. Yediyah means awareness, and kavana means intention, or for the purpose of benefiting. And Rabbi Yehuda says the following, that if you have yediyas ha'avera, you know that what you're about to embark upon is a mechanically, or let's say externally, is a violation of the Torah law, that's enough to violate the Isur. Why? Because you have yediyas ha'isur, even though you don't have kavana. So for example, when he does the Mila in the Makom Tzaras, or when he takes the Koshal Ikrin, he's fully aware of the fact that the Maisa that he's embarking upon is a Maisa Avera. Narvas, you could say, but I don't have kavana. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no, the essence of an Avera is the Maisa itself. As long as this Maisa is well, you're well aware of the Maisa and its repercussions, even if that doesn't motivate you, we're not interested in your motivation. We don't care two hoots about what your kavana is. We want to know if there's yediyas ha'mais. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda comes to the conclusion that davar she'eino miskaven is asur, and the two examples that we gave. And basically, Rabbi Yehuda could be understood. Again, this is a research project that I have. I never got a chance to fully research this. As applying the flip side of what's called mitzvah srichas kavana. That just like if you maintain the mitzvah srichas kavana, the kavana, the intention for the mitzvah is critical. So too on the flip side, in the Avera, he's saying that you want to say that kavana is critical? No. I'm going to tell you mitzvahs ain't srichas kavana. I'm going to tell you that kavana and mitzvahs is not critical. You have to be aware of the fact that you're implementing a maisa, and if this maisa is a maisa mitzvah, you're eating the matzah, that's enough. And therefore, on the Avera side, we're going to apply the same yardstick, and we're going to say that just like mitzvah saying tzrichas kavana, Avera saying tzrichas kavana. Again, when I say tzrichas kavana, please don't fall into any sort of a pitfall here. He definitely is aware of the fact that he's engaging himself in a maisa Avera. He's just not interested, he's not motivated in violating the Avera. So having given that introduction, we can move on in the sugya. The Gemara says, Ali, but the Rabbi Yehuda, the Amidav Hashem, is coming asur, kuli avalo pligi the asur. If we would have accepted Rabbi Yehuda's shita, that Dav Hashem is coming is asur, then both Abai and Rav would agree that this Hana that we're talking about here is asur. Why? Because he's very well aware of the fact that he is going to benefit from the fragrance of the incense of idol worship. And Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not allowed to engage in any maisa vera, even in the absence of kavana. And therefore, when it comes to Isuri Ana, he's not allowed to engage in any action that entails getting Hana, even if he's not doing it for that purpose, meaning for the purpose of Hana. He's engaging in the Maisa for another purpose. For example, he's walking down this pathway not because he wants the benefit from the Avodah Zarah and smell its fragrance, but rather because the other alternative is to go through a Tirchi Yisera and go all the way around. It doesn't matter. According to Rabbi Yehuda, define the Avera by simply Yedias Avera, which means the fact that you're aware, and here too you're aware. So the Gemara now clears the pathway for the machlokas between Abai and Rav. Abai and Rav are not arguing about a case where he had kavana. Abai and Rav are not arguing Aliba the Rabbi Yehuda, because Aliba the Rabbi Yehuda, there's no question that since he's aware and he has Yedias HaVera, in this case Yedias HaNa, it's Asur. Where is the machlokas? Ki pligi Aliba the Rabbi Shimon. The entire machlokas is according to Rav Shimon, the Amar Dovah Shenim Iskami Mutter, that he's matir tzitzas by Harris Bemila, and he's matir koshal ikrim for the sake of health purposes, to cure him from his illness. And now the question is, what do we do in this case where he's walking by and he's trying to get to his point of destination and he has this hana? Abai says the simple conclusion here. Ki Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon says that if you don't have kavana, then it's mutter. He didn't have any kavana. He wasn't motivated for the sake of hana. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon would clearly say it's mutter. Now, who can guess what Rav is going to say?
The opposite.
Right, but what's in one word, you know, the whole, I mentioned this before, but let's see if you could, the whole structure of Rava is built on one word that has four letters to it. Anybody know what I have in mind?
Kavan?
Efshar. No, because again, keep in mind, Kavan is now completely neutralized. It's not an element to the equation. We're going to Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon holds that Dovah Sheinim Iskavin is Mutter. And therefore Abai says, in this case there's no kavana, and therefore it's mutter. But Rava comes along and says it's asur, even though he's lo miskaven. So there must be some new factor here that enters into the equation, that even Reb Shimon, who in the lack of kavana is matir, that's only because of what? Of lo efshar. But if it's efshar, even Reb Shimon would agree that it's asur. So let's read Rava now.
In other words, efshar, that he could get the
efshar meaning he could have gone down another path. There's no logical reason for him to choose this path.
Right.
That's what Rava says, that if it's efshar, don't tell me it's ain't a miskavid. Why did you go? Right? Rava amar ad kan lo kamar Reb Shimon. When does Reb Shimon say that it's a Dovah Sheinu Miskaven, and it'd be honest with me and tell me it's an Eina Miskaven? That's Elehecha de lo Efshar. Meaning it would have been a ganze schlep, you know, to go, you know, instead of taking your bicycle across the Williamsburg Bridge, you walk over the Williamsburg Bridge, right? So that's called lo Efshar. And in that case, you can honestly say that he wasn't seeking out the Hanoah. He only went down this path because he had no other choice, so to speak. I mean, theoretically, he had another choice, but Al-Hecha the Efshar, he has two choices in front of him, two pathways, two roads diverge in yellow wood, they're both just as good. So why did he choose this path? Don't tell me that's an Einam Iskam. So basically what we're saying now is that the Chiddush of Rava, and here's where he parts ways from Abaye, is that Efshar completely neutralizes and undermines Dovah Sheinu Miskaven. And Rav Shimon's Dovah Sheinu Miskaven Mutter is predicated on the fact that it's low Efshar. If it's low Efshar, then you could talk about a Dovah Sheinu Miskaven. But if it's Efshar, that itself objectively makes it into a Dovah Miskaven. Now there's a note here that I wanted to share with you. He says the following. L'Rava, according to Rava, comes out like this, that lo efshar v'lo kamachavin in Rabbi Yehuda's frame of reference for sure is going to be according to Rav Shimon, Rava would agree that lo efshar v'lo kamachavin is mutter. Correct. So right. Let's go slow. So in Rav Shimon's frame of reference, Rava would say lo efshar lo makav. That's exactly when Rav Shimon says Dovah Sheinu Miskaven is mutter, when it's lo efshar v'lo kamachav. Oh, Now, what's lo efshar v'lo kama chamin according to Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda says the davar she'ein miskamin is also. So he says the following: L'rava oser Rabbi Yehuda below efshar v'lo kama chamin. Now, watch the mathematical logic of Tosfos. We've now established that according to Rava, the only situation in which Rav Shimon was matir davar she'ein miskamin against Rabbi Yehuda was in the case of lo efshar. So it must be that Rabbi Yehuda on that very case holds its osur. Otherwise, you've reduced the machlok shir Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Shimon to naught, to a null set. Do you hear the mathematics? A beautiful chap that he's saying here, and he attributes this to Tosfos and other Rishonim, that it must be that according to Rava, we have no choice but to assume that Rabbi Yehuda would hold that lo efshar v'lo kama chamin is osur. Now that's interesting because the Gemara initially says that lo efshar v'lo kama chamin kuli amar lo pligi d'mutar, the shari. But the answer is kuli amar lo pligi according to Rav Shimon. Right. Everybody agrees, even Rava, that within the framework of Rav Shimon, if it was lo efshar v'lo kama chamin, that it's mutar, because that, according to Rava, that's exactly the case in which Rav Shimon was ma'at d'dov v'shen v'skam, because it was lo efshar. On that very case, therefore, ipso facto, we have no choice but to assume that according to Rava, that's where Rabbi Yehuda is oser. So when the Gemara says kuliyamalo pligi the shari, it means both Rava and Abai agree that it's mutter. I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon, but I'll leave it to Rabbi Yehuda. Rava at least would say the lo efshar lo kama chamin is oser, and that's exactly the case in which he argues against Rabbi Shimon. And the answer is that, look, lo efshar per se is not going to be a mitigating circumstance. It's only that lo efshar gives you a lo kama chamin situation. The lo efshar really knocks nails into the cover. It really proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that he's lo kama chamin. Well, Rabbi Yehuda holds that davar she'ein miskamin is awesome. So therefore, lo efshar is not going to be a mitigating circumstance. Now, what we have to understand is, what would Abaye say according to Rabbi Yehuda? Because that's not clear. According to Abaye, even in the case of Efshar v'lo kama chamin, Rabbi Shimon is matir. So it could be the machlokas now between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, according to Abaye, is a case of Efshar v'lo kama chamin. But what would be in lo efshar v'lo kama chamin? It could be that even Rabbi Yehuda would be matir. According to Abaye, right? Hochacha zu, the logical proof of Tosfos is only l'rava bilvat. Sharei l'abaye harem cholkim Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon b'efshar v'lo kama chamin. Rabbi Yehuda oser Rabbi Shimon matir. So now, could it be that according to Abaye, the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is only in the case of efshar v'lo kama chamin, but below efshar v'lo kama chamin, Rabbi Yehuda would be matir according to Abaye? O Dilma, perhaps here Abaye would agree to Rava, and there's a double machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, bein bi efshar v'lo kama chamin, bein below efshar v'lo kama chamin, and that's going to be a major machlokas as to how to understand Rabbi Yehuda according to Abaye. So again, if you're talking about how to understand Rabbi Yehuda according to Rava, we have a logical proof that's absolutely airtight. You know, there's no room for debate. That according to Rava, Rabbi Yehuda is machmir even in the case of lo efshar v'lo kama chamin. Because otherwise, there's no machlokas. Adarama, Rabbi Shimon was the one who said, in the case of lo efshar v'lo kama chamin, it's mutter. If it was efshar v'lo kama chamin, Rava insists that even Rabbi Shimon would be osir. So Rabbi Shimon's kula of davar she'ein miskamin, according to Rava, is conditional on the fact that it was lo efshar. It must be, therefore, ipso facto, that on that very case of lo efshar v'lo kama chamin, that Rabbi Yehuda argues. Hence, we have an unbelievable chumrah that according to Rabbi Yehuda, even in the case of lo efshar v'lo kama chamin, according to Rava's understanding, it's also. And again, as we said before, because lo efshar and efshar are relevant only in terms of kavana. In other words, lo efshar is going to prove that he was a lo miskamin. Well, that's not going to cut the mustard for Rabbi Yehuda. It doesn't help me one iota, according to Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that even without kavanah, it's awesome. So what are you going to tell me? Well, it's lo efshar. So what do I mean if it's lo efshar? Go around the block. You know, make your do your tircha yisera. The lo efshe could only be meaningful, and that's where Reb Shimon comes into play, says Rava, in a case of lo koma chavin, if you hold that dovish einam is kavin is mutter. So now I'm going to support you that it's really a lo koma chavin, and no one's fooling you, no one's pulling the wool over your eyes, because it was lo efshe. If it was efshe, then it's equivalent to kavana. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, I don't care. I don't even ask the question whether he has kavod or he doesn't have the question. All I'm going to ask him is he has yedias avera. No, if he has yedias avera, what difference does it make whether it's efshar or lo efshar? Hence we have Rava's understanding. In Abaye, it's much more complicated. Now in this footnote, he gives another case, a totally different case. I gave you two cases for the Machlok Shin Rav Yudin Rav Shimon was Mila Bitzaras, and I gave you the case of Koshal Ikrin. He has a totally different case. And I'm hoping that you're familiar with this. I've discussed it here in this room many, many times. It's called Greiras Kise Mita Visafsal. So you have soft ground and you want to transport a bench or the like from point A to point B over this soft ground. And what happens is that inadvertently, without kavana, you make what's called charitzim. Charitzim are literally called furrows in the ground. Now, making furrows in the ground is a malacha on Shabbos. What exactly is the malacha? There are two possibilities. If it's inside a house and it's enclosed, it could be Melechus Bone. The problem with Melechus Bone is that it doesn't exist out in the fields. And number two, Charitz and Lechora would be what's called a Makalkel Pasha. Who wants holes in the middle of their ground? They didn't have granite floors like we have here. So the Pasha is that we're not talking about Melechus Bone, but rather talking about Melechus Chorish. And in Harisha, what you have to do is you have to plow the field, and in order to do that, in order to prepare it for Zriah. Now, he was transporting benches. He wasn't in the least bit interested in planting for Zriah. He's not a farmer. But truth is, let's say, maybe the value of his field went up a little bit. It was enhanced by the fact that he has Haritz, whatever it might be. So comes along Reb Shimon, and he says the following. If his interest is what? In Greiras HaKise, he's only interested in dragging the couch. He's not in the least bit interested in what? Help me out here, Rabosa, you're making Charitzim. That's called the Dover Shein of Miskavit, and it's Mutter. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no. He's very well aware of the fact that he's making Charitzim. He has Yedias HaVera. And therefore, even though it's a Dover Shein of Miskavit, he's Chayim. Now, the reason I mentioned to you this footnote, which is based on a sugya in Masechta Shabbos, is because this has tremendous repercussions, and it'll impact on our sugya as well, in terms of what's called a psik resha. Because the Gemara says, Modar Rav Shimon b'psik resha, that means the following. Let's say you have two variables. The ground is very, very soft, and number two, the safsal is very, very heavy. Such that if you add A plus B, it's definite that you're going to make charitz. And the Gemara says the following: when does Rav Shimon allow for a davar shein miskaven? That's heichad leka psikresh, lo havi psikresh. Psikresh literally means you cut off the head of a chicken, it's going to die. You know, a chicken could jump around without a head, but not for too long. And the repercussions are definite; they're predictable. Rav Shimon only agrees in a case, only argues for davar shein miskaven in a case where there's no psik resha. But if there's a psik resha and you know for sure what's going to happen, and there's absolute certainty and predictability, in that case, even Rav Shimon is moda that a davar shein miskaven is asur. Again, there are a million and one questions here: whether asur means midoraisa, midrabanan, is it a chiyuv chata, whatever. We're not going to get into that, but just to get the fundamental principle that Modar Rav Shimon Psik Resha. Now, it comes out that the Machlokas Shin Rav Yehuda Rav Shimon in Shabbos with regard to Greiras Kisei V'Savsal, where he's making Charitzim, is limited to a case where there's no Psik Resha. And we have to understand how that impacts on our sugya over here. When he goes down this pathway, is it certain that he will violate the Isra Anofra of Avodah Zarah? Because if it is, then the Gemara is very odd over here. The Gemara is quoting Reb Shimon and saying that the entire machlokes between Abai and Rava revolves around Reb Shimon, and we definitely don't have kavan over here. And the question, what? How do we analyze efshar v'lo efshar? And Abai says even if it's lo efshar, nevertheless he's chayav. I'm sorry, if it's efshar, I meant to say he's chayav. I got confused because lo efshar is Rav and Rabbi Yehuda, but we're now in Reb Shimon. So even though it's Efshar, says Abai, it's still Mutter, then you can have to assume, standing on the shoulders of Reb Shimon, Abai is Mater when there's no Psik Reisha. Now, I'm not sure what that means. It might mean A or it might mean B. It might mean that maybe he'll go down the path and at that moment they're not burning the incense. Or it might be that he won't enjoy the benefits of the incense. Or C, it could be any of the above. I don't know. I'm not sure what would break up Psik Reisha to make sure that Reb Shimon is on board, because if Reb Shimon's not on board,
the wind is blowing the other way.
Yeah, we don't know where the wind is, so we're not sure if the incense will reach him, or maybe we're not sure if he'll enjoy the incense. Maybe he'll have a fashtukta nose. You know, he's got a bad cold like I've been having for the last few months. I can't get rid of it, and I can't smell a thing. You know what I'm saying? So there are various elements here that, or variables that might mean that it's not a psik reisha, but the question that we have to you know, put on the table, I'm not sure we're ready to answer this question, is what would Abai say in Reb Shimon in a case of efshar v'loka machavin, but there is a psik reisha that he'll have this benefit. You know, all the factors are on the table. You know, there's no wind chill factor, and the fragrance is going to go 24/7, and he has, his nose is clear. You know, everything is, you know, we know exactly, you know, how to go by. You know, there's a church here, it's called Emek Hamatz Leva. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
This gigantic church. Man, imagine what that real estate is worth. I mean, every time I pass by, I think to myself, my God, it must be worth like $20 million.
Hazaz, the one on Hazaz.
Hazaz, right. So if you go down the path, there are two ways of walking. Let's say you're walking from here to there. Okay, let's say you're walking from, well, I'm coming from Arnof, but I'm saying you're walking towards Rehov Aza, and you pass by this church. So two ways of going. There's the regular pathway, but there's also a pathway that goes right by the church. You know, it's almost impossible, if the church is in function, to walk by there without almost seeing what's going on inside. It's like so close. And you and I know that all over the world it's like that. In the West, I mean, there's so many places where if you walk on a certain street, you know, you know, Sunday morning, if you know what I'm saying, like boom, you know, there's all the thing going on there. And if it's a Catholic church, I mean, then it's really a whole to do. So that's, I'm just wondering here, if we're going to apply the principle of Reb Shimon here, and that's what Abai is standing on, then l'chora we have to restrict it and make it conditional on the fact that there's no psik reisha. And Rav is going to say that Reb Shimon is only in a case of low efshar, but in a case of efshar, Reb Shimon is moda, because if it's a case of efshar, then he should have gone another way. He didn't have to go this way. What? They're, all things are equal, and there's no Terchi Yisera. Why did he choose this path? And the fact that he chose this path means he has some sort of element of kavana. Maybe it's not a total gusto, you know, he's not totally motivated, but there must be some element of motivation. Therefore, Rabbi Shimon is going to have a problem here, because Rabbi Shimon is standing on the fact that he's not motivated, and it's Eidim Eskavim. But wait a minute, we're talking about a case of Efshar. So Rav insists that here in the case of Efshar, Reb Shimon is moda, that it's considered a dover miskame. Now all this is what we call the Lishna Kama. This is going to be the first version of the Machlokes between Abai and Rava. And then the Gemara with the Ika Diamri is going to introduce another version. So what I would like to do now is make a note that we'll pick this up tomorrow with the Ika D'Amri, and we're almost at the bottom of Chaf Hamid Beis. What I'm going to start tomorrow is with a review of the first Lishna, because unless we have the first Lishna absolutely down pat, it's going to be difficult for us to really get a grasp on the second Lishna and the differences between the two. And what I also want to do tomorrow is talk about Psik Reish a little bit further, whether Hanas Reach is a Psik Reish, or maybe you could say that he'll be able to close his nose, and if it's not a Psik Reish, and that would save us as far as that's concerned. So Bli Neder, that's what we'll pick up tomorrow, and I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day. If anyone's around tonight, I forgot exactly what time, I think it's at 8 p.m. we'll have a discussion about Purim.